Podcast.
The Joseph Rowntree Foundation defines poverty as when a person's resources are not sufficient to meet their minimum needs. However, poverty is not just about household income, it's also about the cost of living, something we know only too well right now. Poverty is not the fault of those experiencing it, and employment is not a guarantee against poverty. And the vast majority of children in poverty live in a household where at least one adult is in paid employment. Our Health Social Care Partnership is about to publish its third annual review of our Child Poverty Action Plan. And we have a vision where we want an Argyll and Bute where no one lives in poverty. Everyone should be able to achieve their potential and feel healthy, happy and valued. We want it to be a place where everyone understands that tackling poverty is a shared responsibility. We believe that if we act locally and in partnership, we can make a difference. So here to talk about the strategy is Fiona Davis and Mandy Sheridan. So with me today, I've got Fiona Davies, Chief Officer of our Health Social Care Partnership, and Mandy Sheridan, the Service Improvement Officer for Children and Families. So maybe start off, Fiona, with briefly, because you chair the Child Poverty Action Group. So do you want to sort of say a little bit about, you know, what the strategy's trying to do, and then we can talk to Mandy about sort of what that looks like in practice, because Mandy's our person on the ground who makes a lot of it actually happen.
Yeah, thank you, Pippa. So as you say, I inherited being the chair of the Argyll and Bute Child Poverty Action Group when I started in the role in May 2021. And it's not a topic area that from my own professional background I'd had great experience of. So I've been on a real learning curve with the group about what it is that we're trying to achieve. But in its simplest terms, and I think in its most human terms, we're trying to reduce the experience of poverty in Argyll and Bute for children, and therefore for families, because our children always live in a family context, or in the vast majority. And so the strategy really in its most simple terms is about looking at all of the ways that our partners across the public sector and our energy companies can support individual families and individual children to try and address some of the causes of poverty, which are multifaceted and sometimes quite complex, can be intergenerational, but to make a difference in a practical way to each and every child that comes in contact with one of our services, or we're able to provide advice and support to that family from a partner who may not be specifically trying to address child poverty, but comes across children or families through the course of their health and social care or other intervention work.
Yeah, thanks, Fiona. And I think it's, you know, you made an important point in there. It's, you know, for child poverty, you could almost read across and say poverty in general, because it's, you know, it's the similar points, but for children, it's that point, isn't it, of getting the best start in life and all the data that shows if we can get in and give positive experiences early on, all the life chances, health and well-being outcomes are all so much better for young people. So it kind of, there is a read across for me of what we also try and do around education and giving our young people, and in early years, the best start in life. Mandy, what does some of that look like on the ground? I mean, what are the kind of actions that, because we're shortly going to publish the reviewed strategy, I think, but actually what people won't probably want to do is pull the strategy off the shelf. They're more interested in what people actually might see and hear is happening to try and make a difference.
Yeah, so I'd start by saying Fiona's exactly right. Intercommunication, multi-agency working, and mutual signposting for people is key to this work. And it's one of the most important reasons why we need a local Child Poverty Action Group. We need to be working together to make that difference. And what does it look like? Well, the model is to look at four key areas, and that is, how do we improve employment? How do we improve income from benefits, income from employment, and the cost of living? But as Fiona highlighted, that's not enough. One of the key things that we need to be doing as a group locally, and is happening nationally, is address those impacts. How do we get the three drivers of poverty are the pre, but we're always here in the now, trying to address the person going to school without a meal, school uniforms, parents without skills. How can we get them into the employment market, and all of that? And that's really what the plan does. It brings together all those factors. And I must admit, it makes a wordy document. There's something like 69 pages, I think, but it is unavoidable because we have to spotlight a lot of the areas that link to the plan, like the promise, like training of staff, and like children's voice. And then we have to look at things that are key to this, like just picking out some of the important things. And the employability side of things, parental employability scheme is crucial. One of the groups most hit by impacts of poverty are single parents. And this is a scheme specifically designed to give them the skills and the one-to-one support to get them to the employment market. We could also look at benefits and social security and local benefits, and that is something where I think locally we shine and nationally Scotland shines. And I'd highlight something like the Flexible Food Fund, which is something we developed locally, and I think as part of, you know, the Child Poverty Action Group being there to bring together our benefits people, our advice people like Ally Energy, and that's a benefit that makes a huge difference. But things as well like what's happening in maternity, infant mental health, that's addressing impacts in a very real way. And there's a whole host of things that Fergus Walker particularly and Mags Todd are working on, developing school meal banks, school uniform banks and shops in local schools, and getting an online service that's being piloted at the moment. And those are all things that make a difference. And I think we have to look at impacts as well. I think the Scottish Government has been recently criticised for concentrating too much on impacts and not on the preventative side, the three drivers. But I think in current circumstances, cost of living crisis, there's no choice. And that's what we try and do locally. And that hopefully is reflected in the plan.
It's always a balance, isn't it, that we talk about in these sorts of areas a lot, about how you want to ideally get in that preventative space, even sort of pre-birth, of how do you support that. And, you know, there's only so much money in the system. So how do you do some of that, which will take a long time to flow through the system? And as you say, how do you do the now? I mean, and you've raised so much, because it is such, as you say, a multifaceted, you know, all along that continuum. But I suppose maybe if think of some of it is about taking all the evidence, isn't it? And one of the things I think is, you know, that you're doing is important, is about the poverty awareness training and actually getting young people themselves involved with that. Because some of this is about perhaps recognising the facets and signs of poverty and how to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, training is something that we wanted to do more of for such a long time. And then some COVID monies came along that allowed us to do that. And that was just wonderful. So this year has seen a considerable amount of training for staff. I think we trained something like 220 staff in the awareness raising aspects of things. And, you know, it doesn't sound like a huge thing of importance, but for people to when they go for help, you know, a lot of people feel anxious about and stigmatized. And we know that in remote and rural and island places, that is increased, and people often don't apply for help because of that. To have staff that understand what they're going through, understand why things are happening, and the right approaches is fantastic. And, you know, the staff, which I should say, that our elected members, I think, are going to have that training in November as well, which will be incredibly useful. But that makes a difference to approach. And we also, of course, it's also a consultation process, because we get their views and ideas on how we can work better. So it's a win-win. But also, you know, there's so many practical bits of training that have happened and are still happening, like benefit basics in Scotland, supporting low-income families, Scottish Social Security introductions. And, you know, one of the key things that we've been doing for the best part of a year now and is continuing is the Money Counts training. Was adapted from a Highland Money Counts partnership programme by Jenny Dryden, and it's been delivered regularly to staff. So, you know, it's not just a question of staff being aware of how to help. They know in a very practical way how to support people and how to support the more vulnerable group, like single parents. We need to keep finding funds to continue to do that, though. You know, we need new staff to have that training. We need wider people to have that training. And of course, we need young people involved more. We had some young people involved, but perhaps not as much as we'd have liked, because we were concentrating on staff to begin with. But certainly some did attend. And we'd like to expand some of that to children. There are some schools do have poverty champions, which is great. And of course, we have the Youth Parliament people. And people like Mags Todd, who works with the Child Poverty Action Group, but also, you know, works with young carers. She's involved with a lot of that and is setting up a group called Having a Voice. And already they have said, they have asked her to do a training program, a training session for them about what's in the plan. You know, tell us the practical things. What can we pass on to our parents? So we'll be talking about that in the next Child Poverty Action Group, and getting people to do some child-friendly slides with lots of information that they can be trained in and take back to their parents. It should work out really well. I'm really chuffed about that.
I wonder if I could just add a thought about the training, because as Mandy was saying, our public health team have been a really important partner in the delivery of some aspects of training. And certainly as somebody that's come to this topic area from, if you like, outside my own professional experience, what I would reflect is that for many staff, they're desperate from their own value base to assist families who are experiencing poverty that's impacting on children. But they just don't know how to have that conversation in a way that is dignified and respectful to the family and to the children, and that isn't embarrassing. And I think that that's the real strength that comes from the training that we've provided, is that it gives permission to our staff, as well as skills, in just how to open that conversation and to start talking about something that maybe their own professional training or background hasn't equipped them to do. I think talking about money is a highly personal topic. You know, when I'm in my professional life, I don't talk to other people about what they earn or what they spend their money on. It's a taboo subject within our normal social discourse with friends and even family members. We don't tend to talk about what we earn or what we're spending our money on. It's really a very personal topic. So I think the training really empowers our staff to just feel that they can break the ice on this subject that otherwise can feel remote and difficult to access. And I think if we allow people to feel they're allowed to talk about it and give them the skill to open the door to that conversation, that's where the real benefit of that training comes in.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a really important point, especially right now when we're seeing far greater pressures on the cost of living. And, you know, if you look at that, as you say, there's a sense I think people have, as you touched on that sort of shame around it. But when we're looking at what we're dealing with now, you know, the cost of fuel, we had information up at the council recently, 70% of households in Argyll and Bute are at risk of what is defined fuel poverty or extreme fuel poverty, but that's a result of the market. That's not as a result of anything that they've done. You know, and you add in the added costs of transport, you know, the added cost of just sort of goods and services in an area like ours. You know, that's you know, that can be, you know, all add up to it. Because I think I was just looking, the cost, I think, of travel in Argyll and Bute versus sort of UK and Scotland overall average is 185% for fuel. It's 70% more, you know, clothing 34% more. You know, we are dealing with a particular set of circumstances around our geography, and being able to try and signpost the support that people are entitled to, to support that. And I think that's quite an important point. You're going to come in, Mandy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, very much so. I'm pleased to say that the government is recognising that it's so important to know the differences in terms of cost of living, fuel and transport, and cost of food for rural areas. And in fact, things are happening to make that more transparent, and so that, you know, more action can be taken on that. Just recently, there's been a process going on through the National Child Poverty Group, that forum that I go to represent our local group. I think they call it an intellectual sprint. basically a series of workshops to a purpose, which is to look at how we can better get data, usable data, but more transparent data for rural areas, looking at rural poverty. And a report has just actually come out today. I was just briefly reading it before this meeting, and it's a design-based approach to understanding and tackling rural child poverty, solution paper. And there's elements of that I think will help us. And there's talk of looking at reducing the barriers to identifying the data that will show us what rural child poverty really means. Aligning it with geography for different areas, and putting together a national short life working group to take those forward, and hopefully end up with possibly a training toolkit for people working in poverty in rural areas to use to get that data, so that they can be saying to government, for example, this is how much more we need than the cities because of these elements. Here's the data. And also, it's hoped to pinpoint more, even more accurately than that. You know, poverty on Tiree might look completely different to poverty on Bute or whatever. But if we can align data in terms of geography, we've got that picture. And, you know, locally we can act as well as nationally.
One of the things that we've been looking at within the group, just as an example of what you're discussing, is the uptake of the free bus passes for under 22s.
Yeah.
So, and that's the joy of the multi-agency forum that the group has created, is that we don't have a mandate or a responsibility around the rollout of the free bus passes, but it's a topical issue, and therefore we give ourselves permission to become involved and to become interested in it. And what we've observed by going out and seeking the data is that the uptake of the bus passes in Argyll and Bute is lower than a lot of the other council areas across Scotland. There are a couple that are worse, so we're not right at the bottom, but there's definitely a lot of work that I wonder through the group we could support and coordinate to try and improve that, because that's an initiative that all young people have got access to and could be benefiting from, and at the moment aren't. Now, there's again a potential multiplicity of reasons why people haven't taken it up. There'll be young people for which there isn't relevant bus routes that feel helpful to them. But I do wonder that where there are schemes that have been devised and are on offer, that it's part of the role of the group to look how we can maximise the uptake for them, for young people in Argyll and Bute.
Yes, definitely. I agree. And that's a fascinating one, because what we see when we look at those figures is, yes, we're probably right. It's to do with the level of transport and people not thinking it's worth applying. When you look down that list, we're a few up from the bottom, but it's the country areas, it's the rural areas that are in the lower part of that scale, the 30% uptake sort of level, except for the Western Isles, which I'm not sure what that's about, maybe because it's quite isolated in itself and they have to have, well, I'm not sure, I'll need to look into that, but it's an interesting observation.
Yeah, I mean, it's really positive to hear what you've said about the data mandate, because I mean it might seem like the nerdy point, but you know, we've long been in that position where poverty in rural areas is often hidden, in the sense, in when you look at national data, because say in urban areas it shows up much more sort of concentrated areas, whereas ours is scattered, you know, and right across the area, and is interspersed with areas of, you know, reasonable wealth and prosperity, and it can be right next door to each other more than, you know, maybe in concentrated areas. And as you point out, the extent to which that means sometimes it's not as well recognised, and therefore the funding doesn't always follow, that's maybe fully commensurate with some of the challenges that we see, is a key point. And I think sadly COVID and now the cost of living crisis are bringing that into a sharper focus, but hopefully the silver lining will be a greater understanding of those issues that hopefully will enable us to, you know, get tools to do more to tackle that, because it's, you know, it's been quite I think it has been quite illuminating as we went through all of the support that we've put in, and the, as you say, you know, now we've got things like the Flexible Food Fund and things that, you know, hopefully will help to support people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And, it, you know, that remoteness and the problems around that we need to identify more are reflected in things that relate to poverty and service delivery as well. I was presenting at an IRIS webinar yesterday on delivering the promise in rural areas, and you know, talking about the difficulties that transport and communications and accessibility and, you know, where the services can actually be placed in rural areas, all those barriers that make that whole family approach, that wrap around the child approach, more problematic and more expensive. And these are, you know, the links are clear, but these are approaches that we want to use when tackling child poverty as well. And, you know, I agree with Fiona, it's part of our job and part of our local group's job to make all that more transparent and to find evidence that makes that obvious and that more action needs to happen.
So, Manta, just for people who might not be familiar with the promise, if you can briefly sum up what that's all about.
Right. That's a tall ask.
Challenge for you.
Right. The promise. Sorry, I can hear something in the back. Right. The promise is basically a process where the government is seeking to make a commitment, a promise to care experienced, particularly care experienced children and young people. And it focuses on keeping more children out of care, keeping brothers and sisters together, having a experience of care situations that include. And the Scottish Government's committed to what they call Plan 21-24, and this states that every child that is in care in Scotland will have access to intensive support that ensures their educational health and needs are fully met. And so you can clearly see the links to child poverty. And actually, we were talking about training earlier. One of the links and one of the keys to delivering the promise is training of staff, making the most of your staff. And that's something that we've done so much for in Argyll, and people know that we are well on the way to being a trauma-informed working group, and our partners. You know, we've rolled out DDP. We have CALM services that are specifically for care experienced people, young people. And recognising, as the promise does, that things like poverty can produce trauma, and the key is to work with the family, not to time limit it. These things will take time to walk alongside families until they're ready to accept help, to be there, the right services to be there, and to work to the strengths of those families. And you can well see the connections going both ways between the promise and tackling poverty.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think everything you've described about the approach ties with the promise in terms of putting people at the centre of that and us designing everything around them rather than trying to fit in with, you know, process and bureaucracy that we have. And I suppose that goes a bit with the message I think we would probably all hope that people take from this, is that, you know, this is about people and us wanting, in a way, I think Argyll and Bute way, wanting to get in and around and support people with what they need, and that, you know, that's what we're here for and that's what they're entitled to, and, you know, not to feel that there's sort of, there should be any shame or fault attached to this. This is about what we're dealing with in the country at the moment, and the challenges of our geography, and we're trying to set this up so people feel they can they get an appropriate sort of warm reception when they seek help, and that's supportive and understanding, and hopefully people feel they can come and speak to somebody about it. And as you say, Mandy, I think, you know, that's about having multiple points at which they can get access to that, but hopefully whichever organization they come in via, there's that network where they're signposted to whoever's got the best help and support, and hopefully that works for them.
Yeah, I mean, that is crucial, and the whole signposting and connecting up is so important, and you know, poverty is nobody's fault. In fact, in Argyll and Bute, we have a higher employed rate amongst our population than the Scottish average. But the fact does remain that even where people are doing two jobs, wages, salary levels in Argyll and Bute are lower than the national average, partly because we don't have a big industrial base and because of the nature of the kind of jobs that are available. As we know, the I think for Argyll and Bute, the pay gap between men and women is 13%, I believe, which impacts on single parents more likely to be women. And, you know, on top of that, you have the difficulties for remote and rural areas where food will cost you more on, you know, in the Co-op in Tyree than in Helensburgh. You know, often you need a car, whether you can afford it or not. You know, the cost of ferries, the cost of getting to appointments on the mainland, fuel costs. I mean, the situation with Argyll and Bute and the whole issue of dual fuel and no online gas and all of that. I think it was reported in the Herald that Argyll and Bute is going to be the highest in Britain in terms of levels of fuel poverty. It was muted that it might be up to 4,400 per annum for fuel. Add that together, and you know, you have a recipe for poverty that is extremely difficult to get out of. Thank goodness that we have a Scottish government that appreciates that and has done things like increase the bridging payment, the Scottish child payment, which these are things that make significant differences.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much we could cover, I think, with this, and it, I mean, there's a massive overlap with other things that I've talked about on the podcast. You mentioned Ally Energy and the energy advice work. We've talked about before sort of welfare support, and you know, I think the figures are up at over 10 million in terms of what teams have levered in supporting that. So there's a lot of work there and a lot of people who work really hard that we should thank for the work that they do on it. So I'll make sure I include details of how people can contact our organisations for support. And if people do want to actually read the strategy as well as see what happens on the ground, it will be published soon. And they can look out for that on our website. But thank you both for talking about the work. I think we could have gone on for hours about the amount of stuff that's happening around this, and hopefully people will feel able to access the support that's there.
Thank you.
Thank you to Fiona and Mandy for joining me in this conversation. We genuinely could have gone on a lot longer talking about all the activity that there is and the support that's available. There's a whole list of support available, so don't forget, poverty is nobody's fault. It can be experienced by people in employment, but there is lots of support and advice available that you're absolutely entitled to. I could direct you to lots of organisations, including Argyll and Bute, Citizens Advice, Bute Advice Centre, Ally Energy, as well as our own welfare rights support. The best place to find details of how to get in touch is on our website at argyll-bute.gov.uk/worried-about-money. And that will run through all the different issues you might be dealing with and where you can get advice and support. So please do check it out. It's there to help you. Podcast.